Betches Media presents...
Chrissy Teigen referred to Donald Trump as a pussy-ass bitch.
Look, he's a sick puppy. He shouldn't be there.
Well, I lost half a day of skiing.
I'm going to punch him out and I'm going to go to jail. I'm going to be happy.
The Betches Up Podcast.
A speaker has not been elected.
Hello, this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. I'm Amanda Duberman, the news director at Betches.
I'm Elise Morales, the comedian and writer of the Betches Up newsletter.
And I'm Millie Tamaris, comedian and sub-video contributor.
Oh, Millie, do you want to add any color for the listeners of your environment today? I just want to say that Millie is really a consummate professional today. She brought her mic to, I don't even think you guys want to know what type of place is, but she's here for you.
I'm actually in a very classic film archive in Connecticut, shooting a series where I get to pick my favorite VHSs out of this vintage video store.
Okay, I didn't know you could tell us every detail about it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really cool shoot. I just have to record from the bathroom. So I've been in better places.
So if you say, it sounds like Millie's in a bathroom, listeners, she is.
Yes.
All right. Well, we will get right into it for all of our sakes. But, you know, first, of course, need to do a little casual debrief. Very quickly, Elise, what was the best thing that happened to you this weekend?
The best thing that happened to me this weekend? Oh, my God. I feel like completely unprepared. I did not a ton this weekend, but my garden, my raised bed garden that I'm growing on my front deck in a kiddie pool that I drilled some holes into, it sprouted to another level this week. We had a couple like hot, sunny days last week, and I think that it really took the garden to the next level. My corn is growing.
Ooh.
My pumpkin is growing. My big summer project is to grow a pumpkin. Uh-huh. And I would say that the best thing that happened to me this weekend is that the garden really like moved to level two of garden.
Your summer theme is hot garden summer for sure.
Yes, it very much hot is. It's summer. The industry is shut down because there's no work and nothing is filming and I'm growing a pumpkin.
Millie, did anything good happen to you this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I had an impromptu coffee date with my best friend, and that's always nice. And I don't know if it was good, but I spent my weekend resting and watching the Duggar documentary, which is crazy.
There's so many documentaries out right now. I have to add that to my list. I have the Hillsong one. I have the Bama Rush one. There's too much. Last night I saw Titanic for the third time.
Yeah, I was like, how many times have you watched it?
I am very into it. I just like became obsessed with it. I don't know what it is. It's just like, you know, like when you're watching your favorite movie and just like, I just want to be in this world for a while. Mm. And also last night was the final performance for for all of the leads that were in it. The show's still going to go on. If you come to New York City or live in New York, you should absolutely still go. But like Marla Mandel, who created it, and Constantine, who plays Jack, and like the top, like the main four people after like a year of creating and doing it last night was their last night. So it was very, very nice. It was like me, their friends and family, and like then like 100 of the gayest men in New York, which like where else would you rather be? It was incredible. You got to check it out if you're in the city. All right. Today, like all of our shows, we will begin with a number. Today's number is 48, as in 48%. And that is because millennial and Gen Z voters will make up 48% of the electorate in 2024. Famously, 48% is very close to half. And 2024 is going to be the final presidential election where these two generations don't make up the majority of voters. So by 2028, millennials and Gen Z will have eclipsed every other group, making up 54% of the electorate. I mean, by then we'll be slightly older. Some of us in this room, I don't know when we'll, I always ask myself, like, how long am I a young voter? Are we still young voters? I think we're all like 33, 34, right? Are we young voters?
If my manager is listening to this, no. I'm a crisp 26, but yes.
You're a Gen Z voter. I think we're still young voters. I think you're still young until like a young voter till like, what do you think?
I feel like after 35, yeah.
We also have some new data about voting trends of this group from the progressive research company Catalyst. So in the 2022 election, 64% of 18 to 29-year-olds supported Democrats. And more young people turned out in 2022 than in 2018 altogether. So this is, I don't think, super new information to us, even though they finally have all of the numbers. But as I was reading this, you know, I tend to think really optimistically about young people in voting. I think all we have to do as much as it sucks to watch these things happen, is like the people that are passing this hateful legislation, they will eventually die off. They can't stay in power forever unless they find some like life-extending elixir. And as soon as young people make up the majority, we can vote them out. But, you know, I don't think we should take for granted that the Democratic Party will simply keep its overwhelming support among young people. What we say a lot is that they have to earn it. So, you know, the conversation I love to start with today is like, how do you think the Democratic Party could lose these younger voters? As in, you know, us, I think we decided like 40 and younger. And how could Republicans win them over? How could this sort of assumption that, okay, young people are going to be more of the electorate and we always vote Democrat, how do you think we might, what surprises could we be in for if we just expect that to mean, okay, after 10 more years, it's just Democrats forever?
As Republicans, they already are leaning into populism and these economic policies, even though, you know, to the trained eye, we know that when you study their policies, they don't check out, they don't actually benefit who they say they're going to benefit, and they usually don't have legs. And as Democrats continue to lean into really, really following the rules and being into this DC that hasn't existed, and as Republicans lean into populism and lean into social media and misinformation and all of that, I can see many young people, just as we see young people swayed by disinformation all the time and mobilized by, you know, YouTube creators, Twitch creators, right-wing people who just know how to use the social media platforms better and aren't too precious or careful about information, I can definitely see a big portion mm-hmm. of young people lean right, you know?
One of the biggest things that Democrats have to fight probably when it comes to young people is apathy. And the way that they create that is by doing things like throwing student loan borrowers under the bus at every single turn with the debt ceiling deal. The Senate passed a bill over last week to repeal Biden's student loan relief program. It's Biden's not going to sign it. It was passed by mostly Republicans. And then, of course, fucking Manchin, John Tester, and Sinema voted for it. So that's like why it passed the Senate. But like that kind of shit is the stuff that is going to make young voters stay home. Mm-hmm. The things that could turn them conservative, you know, there are some disturbing trends on TikTok and stuff mm-hmm. about going back to traditional gender roles. There's like a big resurgence of this like trad wife thing of like, I'm a traditional wife and homemaker. There's this weird anti-feminism that has bubbled up in TikTok that says like, it starts with questions about hormonal birth control and what that does. And then it goes down this rabbit hole of like, feminism actually did worse for women because you used to be able to just stay home and make your home. And instead now you have to do everything. So like that is actually taking hold on TikTok. And then with young men, we see a lot of young men getting radicalized online by the Andrew Tates, these right-wing talking points, this epidemic of loneliness that we've talked about where, you know, you can get, again, like a charismatic, not necessarily charismatic to us, but charismatic to them, guy on TikTok who says, you know, giving women, giving minorities, giving gay people all these rights has actually oppressed you. And you're and like engendering this victim complex in young men and saying the problems in your life, the loneliness you're feeling is because these other people have rights. And a lot of that stuff is happening on social media and it is scary. So that's, I think, the thing that could swing people right is if people, more like pop culture people, not necessarily like politicians, though some of them might eventually become politicians who these young people would vote for. But right now, I think it's more like internet personalities who are able to very successfully do with young people what they've been doing to the elderly on Fox News, which is to say, like, these people getting rights are the reason that you feel sad, lonely, that you don't feel like you have what you're supposed to have, instead of the real problem, which is, you know, the economic inequality that we've seen, the fact that like our government, we don't have government programs to help people with health insurance, with owning a home. If they're able to take that anxiety, that I mean, this was like the buzzword after Trump got elected, but that economic anxiety that young people do feel of being like, I'm in debt, I can't buy a house. If they're able to take that and flip it and say, the reason you feel that way isn't because we refuse to pass any laws that will help you. The real reason you feel that way is because women have rights and Black people are allowed to say how they feel and gay people are allowed to be openly gay. Then we're going to have a bigger problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because I feel like there definitely is an appetite. We talked about this before with Millie about how like we say a lot that that people are, what do people say, that they're socially liberal and fiscally conservative, where really actually the direction that the kind of like populism is headed in is fiscally liberal and socially conservative. And Sammy and I have been talking a little bit kind of like offline about like the dirtbag left, and I've been learning more about it. And it's sort of like the idea is that you're punching, like the target is capitalism, but it can also very easily veer off into inhabiting the same kind of like the same sort of absurdist, but also fairly, you know, problematic approach. So I can sort of see a future where, you know, that kind of accidentally drags people to a point of view that actually aligns them more with the right. I mean, as you were talking, Elise, like, I don't think anti-vax sentiment came from politicians. They are the ones that grabbed onto it. So, like, we're already hearing, we're going to talk about this more, politicians saying that, you know, trans kids in sports is the women's rights issue of our time. That's going to come from, like, next you're going to hear getting rid of hormonal birth control for women is the women's rights issue of our time. People really connect to that. And I think that's really important, as much as politicians can adjust their platforms and say, no, simply look at the facts and figures. We are always going to be on the side of young people. We know how people vote. Like, if they were really moved by a TikTok they saw on November 4th, then who knows how they're going to vote on November 5th. So for the main news, we're going to stay on 2024 for a bit. Chris Christie and Mike Pence will announce their respective runs for president this week. That's really the extent of it. We can unpack their announcements then. But if you were Chris Christie or Mike Pence, what affirmations are you saying in the morning? How do you hype yourself up? Because I genuinely want to know how Mike Pence hypes himself up, because if he can do that, if he can fluff himself, then anybody can.
Yeah, he looks in the mirror and says, they don't want me dead. Someone will vote for me, surely. Mother loves me.
Yeah.
I can't fathom what they, you know, this is an impossible assignment because I can't fathom what he says. I can't even fathom how these motherfuckers sleep at night, let alone what they say to them to keep them going from day to day to like move their political decision. Mike Pence is in this impossible position where he knows that these motherfuckers tried to kill him. He didn't publicly like speak against Trump, testify against Trump in the impeachment, but he privately did. And we all know that. And so I'm just like, you didn't stand up strong enough to say, fuck you, and to be this strong, strong anti-Trump person. But you also didn't like completely bend over and like kiss the feet of Trump. So to him, you might as well have stood up against. So you really didn't make any stand. And for that, like, what path is there for you? You're not an anti-Trump Republican and you're not a pro-Trump Republican. And same for Chris Christie. I mean, the fact that, first of all, if I had a job and I tried to get kicked out of or killed at that job, I wouldn't want to go back one. And if I was Chris Christie, if I had a job and I had my boss's son-in-law fucking humiliated me and got me fired after my second week on the job, like what happened to Sir Chris Christie, I wouldn't want to go back either. So what the, like, Chris Christie, you know Trump don't fuck with you because Jared ain't gonna have it because you put his dad in jail, you know? So it's just like, and you're not anti-Trump.
I just wonder if these men know that maybe they need to come to New York City more. Surely Chris Christie does, or really any major metropolis where you can pay people to make you feel bad about yourself. You don't have to run for office repeatedly for this to happen to you. I just think that they have some sort of like self-injury kink, but can you please hire a woman to do it for you and pay her handsomely?
Mike Pence was booed walking on stage at an NRA convention in his own state. In his own state. Who is he running for? Who is telling? I need to understand who is talking to him and telling him, you should run. It makes sense for you to run. There's an appetite for you to run. Chris Christie, it's also ridiculous, but at least he is going the anti-Trump track. Like that, he is doubling down on that. There is no appetite for that in the Republican Party. It's not going to work, but at least he has an angle. Mike Pence, truly, who is looking for a Mike Pence candidacy? Who?
He didn't. I truly can't come up with the voter. He made no impression his entire 4 years, except for the day they tried to kill him.
No, exactly. And I think, to the guys who call their wives mother is like that really small 1% Connor Roy ass fucking electorate. At least Chris Christie, I could see you winning like by the skin of your teeth a Republican primary in a state in the anti-Trump stance. Like, by the skin of your teeth. I mean, Adam Kissinger didn't even fucking get reelected. You know what I mean? There are just so many people, like, who can barely get a state vote with the anti-Trump stance. To think that you can do it, you know, on a nationwide is just, it's just crazy.
And Liz Cheney's out. She lost her job. For like,
humiliated on the way out, too.
Yeah, and her last name is Cheney. She's like Republican fucking royalty. Mm-hmm. And she lost her job for going against Trump on something that is so, like, on January 6th, which is such an intense thing. So literally, who is, like, yeah, again, it's like, it's very Connor Roy. It's like, it might happen in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Or it didn't happen in Kentucky.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, I'm talking about like Connor running and them being in like, succession. Could maybe win Kentucky. And then they're like, and then he immediately loses Kentucky.
He does have a Willa in his corner.
And with my YouTube education, I'm going to say that's grandiose narcissism. Thank you, Dr. Romani.
I mean, it's giving. I think we've already used this reference. Like, there's been 7 days since the succession finale, and I've probably used this reference at like 14 times, but his only rationale is that he was the VP. So it's giving, I'm the eldest boy. It's just like, it has to be me.
I'm the eldest
Why
boy.
Wouldn't it be me? You're offering nothing. Okay, let's talk about another 2024 candidate offering nothing. So Nikki Haley participated in a town hall on CNN last night. She said a lot of shit. I specifically want us to react to a clip we're about to play because she homes in on something that we all need to be really worried about as intersectional feminists and that we've talked a lot about a lot. But I think she, in this kind of short clip, I think she gets at something that we should all be nervous about.
Define woke.
There's a lot of things. I mean, you want to start with biological boys playing in girls' sports. That's one thing. The fact that we have gender pronoun classes in the military now. I mean, all of these things that are pushing what a small minority want on the majority of Americans, it's too much. It's too much. I mean, the idea that we have biological boys playing in girls' sports, it is the women's issue of our time. My daughter ran track in high school. I don't even know how I would have that conversation with her. How are we supposed to get our girls used to the fact that biological boys are in their locker rooms? And then we wonder why a third of our teenage girls seriously contemplated suicide last year? We should be growing strong girls, confident girls. Then you go and you talk about building a strong military. How are you going to build the morale in a strong military when you're doing gender pronoun classes? Why is it that... Why is it that you have, you know, kids undergoing critical race theory where if a little girl's in kindergarten, if she goes into kindergarten, if she's white, you're telling her she's bad. If she's brown or black, you're telling her she's never going to be good enough and she's always going to be a victim. All of these things have gone to where they are pushing, you know, and transgender, the whole issue of the transgender, it's not that people don't think in America you should live the way you want to live. I want everybody to live the way they want to live. But stop pushing your views on everybody else. That's the problem, is they're starting to push everything on the rest of us.
So much to unpack there. So much to unpack there.
Wow.
It goes back and forth between slightly humorous to, oh my God, she said that on CNN. But
I'm confused as to what she means by gender pronoun classes in the military. My guess would be they have one meeting where they say, these are the different pronouns. This is how you use they, them. Like, I don't even really know, like, what, I don't think it's a class is my guess.
I think we need to do a sketch that's gender pronouns class.
Class, and it's like the class is 2 minutes long and it's like just use the pronouns that the person says. But that's a very old, like that argument reminds me. And again, it's like they're taking an old playbook that they used for gay people and transposing it onto trans people, because morale in the military was the argument for why supposedly gay people shouldn't be allowed to come out, because how could we have a military if gay people are allowed to say they're gay? So that is, and they did that with women too. How could we have women in combat roles? What would it do? It's always like this weird question of morale. So that's a really old playbook. It's particularly gross to me for her to say that girls are more suicidal because of trans athletes. Like that, it, the rise in like suicidal thoughts for young girls, I think is pretty closely linked to social media and like a lot of other environmental factors. Sexual assault is probably a bigger issue. The pandemic, that
all
young
much
people-
bigger things. I mean, like trans people, it's like 1% of the population, 2%, and they're not even. It's like this is not the women's issue of our time. But yeah, you're right. She amplifies it just without hesitating.
It's also always gross to me to try to say like they're going to have a biological boy in the locker room. Actually, the person who's in danger in the locker room is the trans girl who's forced to change in the boy's locker room, and that is documented over and over and over again. Trans women and girls who are forced to go into men's bathrooms and locker rooms are the victims of horrific violence all the time. So that is also very gross to
me. And I just wonder, like, you're so, how do I explain to my daughter who did track some unspecified issue that she might be having with transgender athletes, is like, how does a parent explain to a child in Texas that if a law goes into effect in September, they're no longer going to have access to gender affirming care that makes them the literal person that they are, that will make, if they are a young trans woman teen, that they will resume growing hair on their face. Like, I'm more concerned about that mother, but the how quickly she goes from like trans athletes to young girls and suicidality. I mean, there's a lot of people that I think are happy to go on that journey because there are harder things in life to conquer. And anytime we have a conversation with an expert on this, they say, you know, these people have found that it is in their best interest politically to target trans kids. And that's why they will do it forever, over and over again, and use it as kind of the root of all of their other arguments, which you just saw her do. Like, she is able to extrapolate to basically all of her other nonsense policies through the matrix of trans kids in sports.
Yeah, I think that what is harmful about this is that she's actually making a soup of 18 different serious issues that have like truth to them, a kernel of truth to them, and combining it. And again, like you're saying, making it all trans, like trans kids' fault or something. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting that the question that she's answering is, what is woke to you? And then everything that she described is a literal fucking dream. Like, it's a literal nightmare. Like, it's not based in any kind of reality. I feel like a few weeks ago, I shared myself of a family member who I have viewed my whole life as being very liberal, but her whole thing with her anti-trans sentiments, and I feel like, unfortunately, is when we're talking about the fiscal, liberal, socially conservative kind of argument, my point is that it's gone too far. It's gone too far. It's gone too far. But then everything that they're saying are the most extreme, rare examples that do not make up 98% of what is happening and what is our reality, you know? And the fact that it's a biological boys, there might be one non-binary person that is using a locker room that affirms their gender. And also, again, it's just this whole thing, it's just so, I mean, I hate to call Republicans hypocritical, but it's the idea of they can't impose their lifestyle onto us. They can't impose what they want. You are doing the same. Instead of you having a talk with your daughter or with your kids about, hey, in the locker room, you're going to see some, there's going to be all kinds of bodies there. Don't fucking stare or mind your fucking business. Instead, it's like, how am I going to explain to my daughter that she might see something in the locker room? And it's like, well, why are you imposing your lifestyle? Like, you don't want to talk to your kids. So now everyone else has to adjust what they're fucking doing. And the suicide thing is so gross because the actual things that can help with suicide, you know, like suicide is all how people relate to the public. So after school programs, food security, access to healthcare, college, actually, you know, fucking college that's not going to put you bankrupt, being able to go get the things that you need, being able to get a job, all these programs that actually do concretely help somebody who's having those suicidal ideations, or even like medication so that they don't have, you know, Nikki Haley has no, you know, no fucking policy against them. It's literally like, I don't want this trans teen, like, to use a bathroom I don't like.
She's just going for the swing voters that she thinks might also feel some type of way about this very specific thing. And for an episode coming out on Friday for Pride, we're going to run an interview most Fridays in the month. I just interviewed Alex Schmitter, who Millie connected us with.
Yes.
And he is in charge of transgender representation at GLAAD, and he also produced a movie called Changing the Game. This movie was made in 2018 and came out in 2021. I rewatched it yesterday. And if you know people that have challenges with issues, if you have challenges with this issue, it's a great thing to watch because it just shows a lot of, like, it just follows three athletes in very different locations and very different types of families and very different communities and how their coaches react to it. And it's just like, it just shows what really happens. And then after it's like, they're just people navigating their challenges in life. And when you see the full context of that, which I think just nobody sees because nobody knows a trans person, they just hear not enough Boogie people man. Do. And they just hear Nikki Haley saying, oh, there's going to be a grown man in your child's locker room. It's like, first of all, what are adults doing? I babysit in New York City. You're an adult. You try to use a kid's bathroom. Good fucking luck. Try to use any bathroom. But it's just, I would really suggest that movie if you know people who feel like they need more information on this issue or why it comes down to, like, it comes down to what sports are about and what lessons they are meant to provide and how it is just simply not more fair to exclude people based on to consider them a gender through their entire day at school. And the movie's just interesting because, you know, they'll talk to somebody like a wrestler in Texas and they will talk to his community members that, you know, I might sort of assume feel a certain type of way about this because they know the whole situation. They're like, of course he should wrestle on the boys team. Like, it's not even a question. But people unfortunately don't know this community very well and they have a lot of questions. And so that's – Alex talked a lot about that in the episode we'll run on Friday about, you know, how much representation really, really matters there. But it's going to be our jobs as, like, as women who believe in trans rights to counteract the stuff that Nikki's saying, because Nikki Haley's saying, because I think you're going to hear about this from your peers as we come, especially if she, I think it's more powerful, quote unquote, coming from her than hearing, you know, like Chris Christie or Mike Pence or Ron DeSantis be like, they're taking over our girls. But I think Nikki Haley sees, like, a really sinister in for herself. We have a few more updates on LGBTQ rights. You probably saw on our last show, we speculated as to how in the world Tennessee was going to enforce its drag ban during Pride Month. On Friday night, a Trump-appointed judge, yes, ruled that the restrictions on the drag performances were overly broad and unconstitutional. This judge, very disarmingly, I was like nodding vigorously, echoed a lot of points that advocates had been making with a lot of like, Tennessee is allowed to try to protect children thrown in. This judge just said, you know, this doesn't do that. We have enough laws to protect children from indecency. And also, these people have a First Amendment right. But the reason that this was also blocked is like a local drag LGBT-friendly theater group that does improv. They're the ones that sued. So the arts matter.
Yeah.
They'll really come in handy. Also over the weekend, Texas, really, really tough story, officially joined 17 other states in banning gender-affirming care for minors. They might be the most populous one to have done it so far, unless Florida's on that list and has more people. But I think Texas has more people, right? I'm not sure.
I think I saw that it's the most populous state to do it.
Okay. The law would block transgender kids, minors, from accessing puberty blockers or hormone therapy, and it would go into effect on September 1st. We've said this all before, and we'll say it again. Prominent medical groups overwhelmingly support the appropriate use of gender-affirming care for minors in some instances. Also important to correct the record, this is not toddlers knocking on – this is not elementary school kids knocking on the doctor's office door. Their parents are taking them because they're in crisis and also because this is what the medical community supports. So, I mean, what about children already receiving these treatments? I referenced this earlier. What do they do come September? According to lawmakers, they will have to be, quote, weaned off, which to me just – really is emblematic of how they view this, weaned off in a medically appropriate manner before then. So just imagine. I mean, like, there are many trans kids that are imperceptibly trans. And to remove their access of the things that let them live the lives that they are, I just don't know how any party can claim that that's like the pro-family party. Again, groups have vowed in order to sue. They say this violates the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause because you don't ban cis kids from accessing the medical care that they need. But hopefully that will be paused. This is another one that could make it all the way to the Supreme Court. But these are all really nasty, but just the idea of removing access to this medication for people that rely on it to present the way that they do and live the lives as the people they are, I just have no words.
Yeah, it's very disturbing to basically force people to detransition. I like just the mental health impacts of that, I can't imagine. But also to your point, cis kids take a lot of these puberty blockers and stuff if they go through precocious puberty or have some kind of other issues, hormonal imbalances and stuff. Without anybody having a problem. A lot of these puberty blockers and whatnot were developed with cis kids in mind and then became applicable to trans kids later. So it's really, really, really sinister to be like, actually, you have to go off your medication. And just think about I just think about medications that I take for my mental health and stuff. And someone saying, actually, you got to wean off. Sorry, no more. Mm-hmm. Bye. Again, it's like this, it goes back to kind of what Millie was saying of like, they're saying, oh, you can't force your lifestyle on us. You're literally forcing a child to detransition. You are forcing them to make a medical decision that should be between themselves and their doctors. It's again, they're coming in between people and their doctors to try to enforce their view, their conservative
view. Between people and their parents?
Yeah. Their conservative view of how the world should be on everybody.
And it's super disturbing because of how purple Texas is, and as Texas is becoming, and as time passes, it's becoming more and more purple. And like their reaction is to continue to pass these more really right-wing conservative, like, fucked up, like, weaning children off, like, what is, you know? And
just to like, be like, you can be weaned off your gender is just, ugh.
It's just so, you know, and again, it's one of those things where it's these policies that they do that are extreme to pat themselves on the back and to show that they're really combating against change that has already been happening. But the practical, just like abortion bans and all that shit, but when you get to the nitty gritty on who's actually affected, it's fucking devastating. And it just, the practical applications, and when you start getting into like all of that, it's just like deeply upsetting. And again, it's not affecting that many people, like a huge, massive amount. You know, it's really only a few families, probably in each county.
Has no positive impact at all.
And no positive impact. And again, for people to, and children to get to that level where they're getting puberty blockers, they have had to run through an enormous amount of hoops. So just to hear that, just for the sake of, you know, posterity, and like just to say that they can, and to have all these people, you know, it's the same thing of like, even with the Tennessee, you know, drag issue, it's like, okay, somebody might deem it unconstitutional down the line, but the fact that people have to sue and it could possibly, like, all of this shit is just taking away and taking energy from things that they can just do to just live. You know, these people just want to live. So it's just super upsetting.
I'm not really sure why it wouldn't take effect until September, but it's, I feel two ways about it. It's sort of like, okay, how concerned are you if you're waiting 3 months, 2 months for this to take effect? And if they're like, oh, it's to give people time to prepare, then there's an implicit recognition that that what they're doing is terrible. And, you know, we should have a whole conversation about this, but Greg Abbott signed this like over the weekend at night. So they're doing this for their base, who they need to keep engaged. They're not doing this for the overwhelming majority of people. This was not a massive headline, also because I think, unfortunately, people kind of have fatigue around these headlines now. There's 50 states, and this is happening in, you know, close to half of them. All right, we will end today with women's rights and women's wrongs. I'm curious if you guys think this first one is a woman's right or wrong. I think it's a right. Mary Trump, Donald Trump's estranged niece, will collaborate with E. Jean Carroll, the woman who sued him for sexual assault, on a romance novel to be posted on Substack. Peak 2023. That's like 2023 Mad Libs.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, sure.
It'll be
ladies.
Serialized on Substack. So Mary Trump wrote a memoir, Too Much and Never Enough. It detailed the Trump family history and how they basically have been really inhumane to a lot of members of their family, and that family is just really messed up. So apparently Mary Trump and E. Jean Carroll are friendly. They were part of a knitting group during the pandemic with law professor Jennifer Taub. And while commiserating on Zoom, they decided to collaborate on a Hallmark-style romance story. They originally wanted to do it as a screenplay, but then because Mary Trump had a background as a fiction writer, she took the reins and started writing it as a book. Carroll is kind of the spicy one. She's the one that writes the sex scenes and sort of figures out, like, adds more, you know, romance novel to it. Like the example they gave were like Mary will send pages and it'll be like the heroine went on a date, and then E. Jean Carroll will add, you know, and her outfit looked like this, and she'll write the romance scenes. It is called The Italian Lesson. It's a romance novel about American woman with a secret past who tries to reinvent herself in Tuscany, where she opens a cafe and meets a handsome local vineyard owner. Carroll promised it would be very, very spicy. They have like a New York Times interview together where they're just talking about it, and basically Carroll is like, yeah, it's basically going to be, you know, soft porn. But they did promise there would be no politics and no Trump. So what do you guys think of this collaboration?
I'm just excited for when Diane Keaton stars in the movie version of it, I guess.
Oh, my God. To bring Nancy Myers into this collaboration would be epic.
I think it's very much something. My mom is like a Under the Tuscan Sun devotee. Yes. This sounds like sexy Under the Tuscan Sun. Mm-hmm. And God bless.
Yeah.
It made me think of...
No, just like, you know, we're all trying to make content. And with the pending SAG strike and WGA strike, you know, we're all trying to get in where we fit in. Mary Trump obviously was cut off. And, you know, so she's trying to make a buck. E. Jean Carroll ain't seeing that $5 million. So, you know, if they can
get some... This is very strategic.
Yeah, if they can get some pantsuit Dems to buy this book, which, you know, I might listen. I'll watch the Hallmark, you know, shit on this. And, yeah, I am all for someone getting a book.
Maybe there is a networking group for women who have been aggrieved by Trump, but who can collaborate somehow to get their bag in response. But this did make me think, who else should collaborate on a romance novel? So I have three proposals for you. I'm curious which one you would want to hear more. Huma Abedin and Hillary Clinton, Monica Lewinsky and Maria Shriver, or Marilyn Monroe and Stormy Daniels. Which one, which romance novel, which I'm sure, you know, there's some stuff borrowed from reality, but which would you be all over?
I know my answer.
I know mine. You go first, Millie.
Oh, I don't know if I want it to be a romance novel, but I want to hear what Huma and Hillary got to say. As yeah. scorned women.
That's like, a thriller. That's a goodbye, Earl.
That's a good, listen, that's a fucking Thelma and Louise shit that if I ever saw it. I mean, or Bad Sisters, something like that. Like Huma and Hillary, let's go.
I would love to get some content from them. Romance novel, maybe a different direction. What's yours, Elise?
I was going to go Monica and Maria Shriver just because I think both of them deserve some romance. I think both mm-hmm. of them deserve to. If they have not found the romance of their dreams, IRL, I want them to find it in the pages of their novel. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll round us out. I'm definitely choosing Marilyn Monroe and Stormy Daniels. I think me and E. Jean Carroll would like that romance novel the best. that one's going to get like 5 eggplants and sweaty faces on Goodreads. But also, of course, very well-rounded and important women in history, of course, with various types of contributions.
I just feel like it would be depressing.
That's true. They need a ghostwriter to bring some levity to it.
Yeah, it's going to be very dark and depressing. Yeah.
I just will never forget the way that Stormy Daniels described Donald Trump as having a mushroom penis. And
she's
just
got a way with words.
She has a way with words, but it's a disturbing way. Yeah. And I respect her for telling us the truth. But mm-hmm. I don't know if I can connect with those kinds of descriptions in her novel.
I feel like both Marilyn and Stormy have a story to tell. Is the mm-hmm. story uplifting? Going to lift my spirits? Absolutely not. It's going to take me to the deepest, darkest depths of Dick Cheney hell. So, okay.
I think Monica Lewinsky and Maria Shriver, and if you don't know, Maria Shriver is Arnold Schwarzenegger's ex-wife. And she's also like vaguely a Kennedy, right?
I think she's fancy.
She's like also a fancy Dem somehow.
I think she's a Kennedy.
Yeah, I think they would like meet together and then maybe take a vacation. And
I think she might be Caroline Kennedy's daughter.
Yeah, something like that.
Her mom is Eunice Kennedy. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know there was a Eunice in the mix. I gotta be honest.
Which one was the one that got the lobotomy?
That's Rose.
Oh,
that's Rosemary. Is the one that they forced to have a lobotomy.
If we can bring in some of that, then I am all over that mm-hmm. that movie. Listen, gals, I think you should go to your managers with these proposals because people want content. There's no content people don't want.
Well, you're not allowed to pitch. That's scabbing. You're not allowed to pitch.
That's scabbing. That's scabbing. And I feel like if I said Trump mushroom penis, I will get dropped by my management.
All right, finally today, we have a necessary follow-up to our perennial discussion of will Taylor Swift ever acknowledge the political situation in the United States again? She did kind of. Okay, so on the first day of Pride, we have talked on this show, in case you have missed it, a lot fairly critically about not just the Mattie Healy of it all, but just that, as Millie says over and over again, and I quote her saying, she made a whole documentary about one Instagram post telling people to vote in Tennessee, which was, 5 days before an election? So to sort of create that status around herself as a thoughtful political participant and then to sort of disappear has been confusing to us, especially those of us that respect her in many other ways. So on the first day of Pride at a show in Chicago, Taylor Swift talked about, so she started by saying how encouraging it was to see that people feel safe and affirmed at her shows, how wonderful. And she acknowledged that that isn't the case everywhere. So I'm going to read what she said in addition to that. We can't talk about Pride without talking about pain. Right now and in recent years, there have been so many harmful pieces of legislation that have put people in the LGBTQ and queer community at risk. It's painful for everyone, every ally, every loved one, every person in these communities. She went on to say, that's why I'm always posting. This is when the midterms are. This is when the important key primaries are. We can support as much as we want during Pride Month, but if we're not doing our research on these elected officials, are they advocates? Are they allies? Are they protectors of equality? Do I want to vote for them? And then she concluded her speech by telling the crowd, I love you guys so much and happy Pride Month. The thing that stuck out to me, I think that's a fine statement. The thing that did stick out to me is that, like, I don't think she does post on all the most important races. I don't know who told her that was okay to say.
She's like, that's why I'm always posting. And I'm like, okay.
She posted before the 2022 midterms. But okay. I don't think she posted. She doesn't post about the ballot initiative. She doesn't post about, yeah. There's been so many elections.
I'm wondering if we're missing a word, and maybe this was spawned for always pads, where it's like, and that's why I'm always posting about that.
But do you think this was, to me, it's like this reeks of this was PR vetted
within
an inch of its life. But then why say something that is so easy to quibble with? Like, well, I just
in Chicago reads too. Her
mentions. Yeah. Well, number one, I think that this statement would have been more impactful in Nashville, mm-hmm. number one. But okay, she mm-hmm. did it on the first day of Pride. That's when she was in Chicago. Whatever. Taylor Swift is someone who, like, she's probably the most famous person who reads her mentions. And I think that's evidenced by.
Yes.
You know what she's always posting about? Ice Spice and her collab with Ice Spice. And why is that? Like, it's very clearly a response to everything. And so, I mean, again, it's like, I'm glad she said it. I'm not going to say absolutely, don't say
yeah,
it.
Right.
Yeah.
But to the little, it's very weird to me to say, and that's why I'm always posting, when it's like, you know that that's not true. And you know that that's actually come up in this dialogue that's been happening around you. So it feels still very, it's very her.
It feels, and also, okay, I don't want to project, and I want to watch, you know, people thinking like, oh, is anything ever going to be good enough for them? I mean, honestly, probably not. People can always do better. But like, it's almost like if she had just taken the part, the incorrect part out of it, I would have been happier with it. Just don't claim to do what, and then that part of it almost felt defensive. Like,
yeah,
because you know she's considering, she's reading people say, why doesn't she post about elections? And she's like, that's why I do post about elections. Again, extremely projecting. She might have just volunteered that and not realized. But like, somebody very easily could say, no, you're not always, or your definition of always is not actually how frequently we need your voice in this. And I think that's the overall criticism, which is like, for me, she's not as present as she needs to be when it matters, is still true. A Pride Month statement like this is not enough, but like, thank God it was something, because I was starting to genuinely wonder if she was just homophobic or transphobic or didn't believe in abortion, because she hasn't said anything. I was like, maybe we've just got her all wrong.
Well, I just think that I think, you know, I'm not going to say it's worse than being homophobic, but it is like, she's just trying to play it safe, like completely safe. And the people that she's trying to play it safe with notice and are noticing her silence. So this is PR stuff. Like, this is PR language. Again, it's not something organic where, again, like a Cardi B or Olivia Rodrigo's like, fuck Justice Alito, you know? Like, this Hayley isn't Williams, mentioning. Yeah, this is like, you have to do our research. And if they're not advocates, don't vote for them. Instead of being like Hayley Williams and saying, fuck Ron DeSantis. Fuck this one person who's actually doing harm. It's like, you just have to make sure and do your research. Like, she's not really, she is really, really, really calculated and playing it safe, which is the criticism of her. And it's like, and I guess it's just this whiplash of like the previous album and the whole me of it all. And that like Pride Homecoming ripoff that she did with the marching band and Todrick Hall, of leaning into this like embrace of queer people, to the whiplash of like, you played 5 shows in this state that's banning drag performance, or like, and you're not saying anything when Maren Morris brought drag queens out in the fucking CMTs, like in the Country Music Awards or the Country Music Television fucking award things in Austin. You know what I mean? Like, it's just it's that whiplash. So I think, you know, again, I'll proudly say, you know, again, I'm not a super Swiftie. I do think she's an incredible songwriter. We're always going to say that. This has nothing to do with her song things. I think to me, it's the transparent playing it safe when it comes coming off of a whiplash of this hard lean into a pro queer stance, and in conjunction with somebody who said disgusting, awful things, who does not feel remorse for it, about Black women in general, Jewish people, and all this stuff. It's just like all of that in combination is just kind of yucky.
Yeah. And I'll remind people that we only dissect everything Taylor says with an image of its life, because that's what she wants. That's why she's putting it out there.
Yeah, she's
like a politician in that way.
She's the Easter egg girl. I do just want to say, because I went on her Instagram because I had to, ahead of the 2022 midterms, I don't know if she archived a post or what.
She tweets. She just tweeted it last time.
Okay. Well, on her Instagram, she posted on November 1st, she announced Eras Tour. On November 4th, she posted some kind of video about it's a paid promotion with Target. On the 7th, which is the day before... On the 7th, before the day before the election, she posted about Jack Antonoff's version of download Anti-Heroes featuring Bleacher's music.
So she's always posting something, but it's not.
So I guess, yeah, I think she said, that's why I'm always posting, period.
About the elections. Make sure to do your research.
Because I'm looking at
Insta. Listen, we're just actually misinterpreting her lyrics, as people often do.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor Swift should take a cue from the allies.
Pause between always posting,
exactly.
And that is her pro-abortion stance, is that there's a pregnant pause between posting and this. So we're not seeing it, guys.
Right, yeah. True. Maybe if I zoom in on some of these posts and I look at the capital letters and I add them up, it'll say vote in the midterms or something like that. But I'm just saying, face value, she posted in November many, many times, and it was all just promotional stuff for Midnights. So,
well, she needs money. She's a struggling artist, Elise.
She simply must. I mean, I would say to Taylor Swift, take a cue from the allies on this podcast and go to Titanic 3 times, like I did.
Yes, Amanda Duberman's gay activism and allyship begins and ends. Not that you interviewed the head of trans representation at GLAAD. It's that you saw Titanic 3 times with the original cast.
That is the most queer thing that I have ever done. Listen, I'm always inclined to say, Taylor, if you need a feminism spirit guide, hire me, but don't hire a non-white woman who will tell you what to do. There's so many that you wouldn't even have to pay that much money who could just tell you very simply, here is a good way to soft launch your feminism, and then to actually show up in a way that will
Taylor
be helpful.
Taylor Swift, I'll do it for $100K.
This was something.
$100K? What is that? One jet flight?
You gotta charge more than that. Yeah. We got to get you up from there. All right. That is our time for now. We'll be back Thursday until the end of democracy. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
From the bathroom. And this is the Betches Up podcast.
Reporting live from the bathroom.
Bye.
Bye.
The Betches Up podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com.
Betches.